I love the sound of breaking glass. J'espère que vous êtes bien à notre écoute. Notre lunchtime en anglais continue avec la chronique Breaking Glass de Dennis Bro. I need the noises of destruction.
This is Bro on the World Film Beat, Breaking Glass. Best of Venice 2018, Me Too, Fascists of All Stripes, The Mafia Exposed, and Beheading a King. The top prize at the Venice Film Festival went to Alfonso Cuarón's Roma, a black and white, long take masterpiece about class relations in Mexico distributed by Netflix, all of which will make it a challenge for the Hollywood Film Academy to award it Best Film. But here's hoping, and the Venice Award and its prominence at the festival, where it was the overwhelming choice of both critics and public, should help. My award for Best Actress goes to Yalitza Aparicio, the Indian non-actor who played the maid in Roma, alternating between warmth and affection for her charges and stoicism at their contempt, neglect, and appreciation of her. My best actor, along with the jury, goes to William Dafoe for his Van Gogh in At Eternity's Gate, a film that on the plus side refuses the recent heritage treatment of the Impressionists, opting instead for a concentration on a sentient depiction of the artist, but on the minus side, elides much of Van Gogh's social import as champion of the peasantry. A continuing story throughout the festival, after the March of 82 women on Cannes for the screening of a film by a female director, was the exclusion of female directors from the competition. Only one female director was represented in the official selection, the Australian director of The Babadook, Jennifer Kent, who's The Nightingale, won the third place prize at the festival and was also in my top five films. Festival director Roberto Barbera was criticized for this lack of representation, responding that the problem did not lie with the festival, since female directors as a whole submitted a little over 20% of the films, and in the festival as a whole represented about the same percentage of films. But it was pointed out that as a crucial world festival, and as I said last week, perhaps now the major festival, its choices could help alter this balance. Barbera refused a quota system, but did sign on in the course of the festival to a Venice pledge for increasing participation of women in all aspects of the festival. The French director, Jacques Audiard, whose first English language film, The Sister Brothers, a Western with John C. Reilly, Joaquin Phoenix, and Jake Gyllenhaal, called attention to the discrepancy, but a Variety critic made a necessary point in asking whether the festival could have done without one more male journey, suggesting that Odiar's film might have been replaced by one by a female director. John C. Reilly then defended the film, claiming it was about deconstructing masculinity in a way that sounded like a hollow diatribe, and revealed that position as the last gasp of male privilege. At the ending of the screening of Kent's film, a critic yelled out a misogynist slur, and the film, like Kent's previous film, Questioning the Sanctity of Motherhood, does challenge both male and colonial prerogatives in its journey across an Australian landscape in the 1820s, peopled with a righteous and embittered British officer who sanctions the murder and rape of a poor Irish ex-convict woman's husband and baby. The woman speaks and sings in Gaelic and is the nightingale of the film, who seeks revenge on the handsome British lieutenant who has tortured her, joining with a young Aborigine, who similarly is called the Blackbird, in her quest. The most stunning effect of the film is this landscape riddled with Aborigines hung from trees or in chains and infected with the constant brutality of the British colonizers toward the country's native inhabitants and toward Irish and women. My problem with the film occurs at the end, though, when the Irish woman and the Aborigine man stand in their own space, watching the sun rise after he has effected her revenge. The film refuses a sexual relationship between these two oppressed, and unfortunately provides the perfect identity politics moment, where each remains in their own space, in an unbridgeable distance between them and the other, in a way that refuses the common bond their struggle has created. With the exception of the ending, which also happened in a sudden benign transformation of a rampaging mother threatening her child in The Babadook, This is a tough, bitter film that continues the confrontation of Australia with its particularly cruel history, since seen as it manifests itself in the present in television series like Mystery Road, and marking the films and series produced through this new willingness to confront the country's problems as particularly noteworthy. The Nightingale joins Roma, American Dharma, the Italian film A Story Without a Name, whose English title is The Lost Caravaggio, and the French film A People and Its King, horribly retitled in English One Nation, One King, as my festival top five. The misogynist slur was one sidebar at Venice, another was the surprise appearance of Steve Bannon at the screening of Errol Morris's phantasmagoric depiction of the evil that is Bannon in American Dharma. Bannon, who is on a tour of far-right parties in Europe, was not invited as part of the delegation of the film. He seems to have slipped in and slipped out. Morris's film, coming after last year's Venice masterpiece Wormwood about CIA assassination, builds on that monumental work. The film, as they say, gives the devil his due. Incorporating film clips as Bannon explains films that inspired him, Morris's confrontational interview, and in the end a conflagration that demolishes what looks like the airline hangar where the interview took place, as an illustration of Morris's contention that Bannon's wish is simply to destroy. This is again an embellishment of the documentary, using fictional techniques pioneered in The Thin Blue Line and take it to an extraordinary level in Wormwood. Morris compares Bannon to the devil in Milton's Paradise Lost, a comparison Bannon does not deny. And unlike The Fog of War, where McNamara, who helped plan the Vietnam War, seemed to use Morris to burnish his legacy, this film, while acknowledging Bannon's genius, his talking points for Trump's victory were keep out foreign workers, bring jobs back home, and get out of foreign wars, an agenda that returned the white workers en masse to the Republican Party, he does not skimp on also acknowledging the racism and hatred that is the flip side of his message and what amounts to a restoring of white supremacy. The most telling moment is Morris's and Bannon's differing interpretation of the end of Orson Welles' Chimes at Midnight. Welles' Falstaff is betrayed by Prince Hal, who now assumes the mantle of power and turns his back on his friend. This is how Morris sees it. Bannon's interpretation is that Falstaff realizes Prince Hal must harden himself in order to rule. This could be Bannon's own excusing Trump for cutting him loose, but it also does reflect the fascist attitude that power is everything and ruling is all. Two other films about Trumpism disappointingly fail to deliver. Frederick Wiseman's Monrovia, Indiana is a supposed attempt to understand Trump's supporters, but is so objectively focused on an institutional view of the town that it fails to generate much insight on anything. On the other hand, S. Craig Zeller's Dragged Across Concrete, with Mel Gibson and Vince Vaughn as bitter, resentful cops, Gibson's 60-year-old for never being promoted, mostly because he has a history of violent treatment of suspects, just ends up alibying for their resentment by, in the end, having them sacrifice themselves, instead of pointing out in what ways their resentment is warranted. The film by B-director Zeller goes soft and fuzzy on police violence and corruption, where 50s noir films like Where the Sidewalk Ends or Zeller's aesthetic mentor Don Siegel's Private Hell 36 illustrated the full brutality of the police. The antidote to this coddling was Robert Minervi's What You Gonna Do When the World's on Fire, the tracing of paths of resistance in Mississippi at various levels of the black community in the wake of a police shooting. We get a tender story of one older boy taking care of another, with the mother's warnings that it's no longer safe to go out at night. A group that calls themselves the New Black Panthers that marches on neighborhoods and confronts the police, and a female bar owner whose indomitable spirit, even when her indebted bar is closed, expresses the will of the community to survive under pressure. All this, though, is strangely unaffecting and might have been better had it provided more background on the community as a whole and the racial power structure in the town. Undeniable, though, is the fieriness of the rotund female leader of the New Black Panthers answering her phone, "Black power, black power." On the subject of working class revolt, and history itself was a powerful subject at the festival, there was Mike Leigh's over-talky, polite Peterloo about the organization and subsequent slaughter of the members of the largest mass gathering in Britain up to that time in 1817. Far better was the French film A Nation and Its King, the French Revolution told from the point of view of the sans-culottes, that is, of the ordinary people who made and were often betrayed by the revolution while continuing to push it forward. The French film ends with the triumph of the king's beheading and sees this as a victory of the people over the emerging bourgeoisie, many of whom defended a king who had deserted the nation. Peterloo begins with the clamor of Waterloo and a wounded soldier's return to the factory headquarters of Manchester. The film details the endless debates as working class organizations in the wake of the French Revolution struggle to find their voice. Unfortunately, what it also documents is the passivity that defines the English working class, who, with all the numbers in their favor, talk themselves out of arming for a potential confrontation in their rally for universal, which meant male, suffrage. They don't even bring a knife to a gunfight, while the upper-class lawmakers have no qualms about unleashing the soldiers on them as the empire turns its full might on its own people and on the soldier wounded at Waterloo. The contrast in the two films, one about a people acting to make and enforce a revolution, and the other about a people tricked into arguing not about their grievances, but about whether they should be peaceful or not while their rulers simply embrace violence, is extremely instructive in the history of the resistance of the two classes, while also making for one film being active and somewhat exhilarating, and the other passive and ultimately flaccid. Finally, there was the Italian film Story Without a Name, which in English is retitled The Lost Caravaggio. The film is on the surface a reflexive feature about filmmaking concerning a screenwriter who now uses a female ghostwriter. The script that the female writer is working on, though, is also a major part of the film, and it concerns the actual theft by the mafia of Caravaggio's The Nativity from Palermo 50 years before, and in the present, a negotiation between the mafia and the state for its return. Here, a film about filmmaking, a kind of cliché after 8 and a half, is also about the way that in Italy, truth can only be told in fiction, and even fictional representation involves a certain amount of danger. A wily romance between the screenwriter and the resourceful female ghostwriter, and a reflexive film with a purpose other than that of the by now tiresome and somewhat dishonest focus on the process of an art that is ever more imbricated in commerce. This is Bro on the World Film Beat, Breaking Glass at Venice 2018. Oh, change of mind.
Dennis Bro is the author of Film Noir, American Workers and Postwar Hollywood, Class Crime and International Film Noir, and Maverick or How the West Was Lost. His current book, to be published in 2018, is Hyper-Industrialism and Television Seriality, The End of Leisure and the Birth of the Binge. C'était Breaking Glass de Dennis Bro sur Art District. Très bonne suite de nos programmes jazzistiques et artistiques à notre écoute. Sound of breaking glass.